What's up? Welcome to Nostalgia Dave here, another podcast. What's going on in pop culture right now? Kind of a short pod this week, but just a few key things to talk about. Chief among them would, of course, be the new film Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the latest film in the Ghostbusters franchise. Had to touch on that. And then we got three albums to talk about. I think three important ones, maybe not the three most popular albums of the year, but I think three albums worth hearing. That, of course, would be Tyla's self-titled debut album following her breakout single Water from last year, Matt Champion's debut album, Matt Champion, of course, formerly of Brockhampton fame, and also Empress Of with a new album, someone I've talked about before on the show. So make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/nostalgiapod, linktree.com/nostalgiapod. Get the pod any way you can. See the links below. Get the best of the 2024 Spotify playlist. Let me know what's good, and let's get into this. What's up? Welcome to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Empress Of's fourth album for your consideration. Empress Of, an independent artist, dance pop primarily, but he does a lot of sounds. I've been a fan of hers despite her seeming lack of popularity. Like, I wish she was a lot bigger than she was. Like, she's got attention, she's got internet attention, but she's not a massive artist. And I really wish she was. I loved her last release, the 2022 EP Save Me. That track, Save Me, absolute banger. And Empress Of, you know, whenever she releases anything, I'm very interested because she is just a very intriguing and unique and singular artist. And the lead single for your consideration, which came out at the end of last year, Kiss Me, featuring another of my favorite artists, Rina Sawayama, certainly got my attention. And I'm happy to say that Empress Of's fourth album, For Your Consideration, is a banger. This album has so much to it, so much touch, so much variety for an 11-song, 32-minute album. Empress Of, her vocals, her vocal ticks, the effects she does with her voice, the drop-ins, the production changes, the switch-ups, all of that really comes through as so intentional and great. And then on top of that, there's just a lot of standout songs. Lorelei, very dancey pop banger, catchy hook, love the vocal breakdown on that. Preciosa, great drum tempo, Empress Of giving you some Spanish vocals on that. Of course, the lead single, Kiss Me, Rina Sawayama and Empress Of gave us a banger. This is like a great song to run to, the piano keys, so catchy. I think the chorus is absolutely outstanding on this song. Feminine, just this pulsing bass. Again, with some Spanish vocals. Sucia, a lot of fun on that one too. Baby Boy, I thought the melody was so, so catchy. And to end it off, you had a Muna feature as well. Like, I think there's just so much fun stuff here. Primarily dance pop, but there's some other touches from Empress Of. And I just think she's a really, like, awesome artist. You know, I don't even have a whole lot more to say, but, like, this is, you know, much like how that Save Me EP for five tracks really wowed me. She's really, I think, come a long way as an artist, leaning into this primarily dance pop lane. But with For Your Consideration, you get a lot of other genre drop-ins. And I think just in general, the tempo consistency on this record stands out. Production, of course, and Empress Of, her vocals, she knows, you know, I think when to keep it natural and when to do some changing and switch-ups and altering and editing to her voice to fit the sound. That's what makes an album like this so fun. So I absolutely recommend people listen to this. She's, to me, a very singular and unique artist. And I hope that the Rina look will put more eyes on Empress Of. You know, not that Rina Sawayama is a massive artist in her own right. She's not, but she's got a lot bigger of a profile than Empress Of. So hopefully that can trickle down at least a little bit. But yeah, let me know. What did you think of Empress Of's fourth album, For Your Consideration? Do you think it was a banger like me? Let me know. And for more music reviews, subscribe. And I'll see you next time. What's up? Welcome to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Matt Champion's debut album, Mika's Laundry. Matt Champion, rapper, singer, multi-hyphenate. You know him as a former member of Brockhampton. And this is Matt's first release post the ending of Brockhampton. Brockhampton talked about them on the show quite a lot, reviewed most of their albums, check that out. Also been talking about the other Brockhampton solo releases that we've got lately, such as the Kevin album, Kevin Abstract album, as well as the Merlin Wood, Amir Van collab release that we got. A new album from Matt. You know, I'm obviously very interested in hearing anything from the Brockhampton alums. Matt was never my most favorite member of Brockhampton, but he certainly was an important member of the group, like many of the members, standing out within the group for his own unique presence and sound as a rapper primarily in the group. So I, of course, wanted to hear what he would be cooking up. This album is out on RCA Records, just like the old Brockhampton deal was. Seemingly all the solo guys have maintained their RCA deals. I'm very excited to say that Matt Champion's debut solo album, Mika's Laundry, is excellent. I was not expecting to be as wowed as I was by this album. 13 songs, 33 minutes. There is so much variety to this album. And I've never been as impressed with Matt as a member of Brockhampton the way I am now from this solo work, really blossoming. This is an album that is doing so much. There's so much genre variety, sonic variety, vocal variety on this album. Not all of it works, but so much of it does. So much of the choices, the switch-ups, the production flips. It's a lot of times, a lot of that is happening in the middle of the same song. There's just so much variety here, and I think a lot of it really grabs you. And that's why I was quite impressed, you know, whether it's something quite acoustic, like Aphid, you know, very raspy voice for Matt, or the drum tempo picking up on Steel, or the Trap of Jib, or the feature from Jenny Kim of Blackpink, of all people, on this album. There's just a lot to this. And man, there was a lot of stuff I really wanted to revisit. I thought Dogfish was incredibly energetic for a pretty short song. Yeah, I was kind of wowed by this. And to me, I think this is one of, if not my favorite solo project from any of the Brockhampton members. So yeah, big deal. It's kind of going through the tracks, you know, one by one here. I thought the first song, Green, was kind of blah. But after that, Aphid featuring Dijon, man, that acoustic sound with the raspy, anguished voice from Matt definitely gave me Dominic Fike vibes in a good way. We of course, know that they're colleagues, they're friends. Steel, the Door Ajar vocals really fit the song well, really add a nice texture to that. I like that song a lot. Jib, the rap, you know, the switch up 1 minute in when the bass kind of drops and the tempo picks up, that's a banger for sure. You know, I think some of the songs are kind of undefined on this, like the vocals are almost too minimal, but because the song, the track times are pretty short and every song is willing to change itself up pretty quickly, those undefined moments don't linger for long, and you're get back to something better pretty quickly, which I think is a great sign. Purify, I thought the melody at the end definitely had some Brockhampton DNA. I like that one a lot. Again, Dogfish, guitar on that, very energetic. I think the lively moments of that song as it goes up and down, the highs, the peaks really grab you. Code Red, I thought the vocals on this compared with like the bass drum, really fun rap on this one. Aren't You Excited, very up-tempo, almost joyous, almost happy. I really like the energy being communicated on that one. Slow Motion, I believe this is the second or third single featuring Jenny Kim from Blackpink. Quite the unexpected collab for sure. Jenny herself said that they actually made this song 3 years ago. They were in studio together, pretty cool. I think the song's fine, but more than anything, I find it curious, the timing of this. You know, for the Jenny and Blackpink fans, this was recorded when Jenny was, of course, on her original contract with YG Entertainment. Now we know, of course, she's signed back with YG as a member of Blackpink, but her solo work is no longer signed to them, and she released or created her own OA, you know, music label. I wonder if that timing adds up there, where this song was not going to come out until Jenny's solo work was under her own control. Interesting question. Of course, it's, you know, it's a collab with Matt. But yeah, I believe they connected at Coachella back in the day. I'm not even sure if it's the first or the second Coachella. I think it's the first one, obviously, with the 3 year wait. So cool. Nonetheless, hopefully we get more features from Jenny. Ooh, the song Slug, I think the horn on that, I'm not even sure what kind of horn it was, but that one, it sounded cool and really groovy, like really groovy song. The pitched vocals from Matt certainly altered, like sounds awesome. Yeah, like this album goes in a way I really wasn't expecting. And I really have to recalibrate my thoughts about Matt Champion, you know, because when it came to the rappers in Brockhampton, well, I always thought more highly of Kevin and Amir when he was in the group, and Dom. you know, and singers, you know, I wouldn't think of him as the strongest singer in the group either, obviously. So he was just playing his role and an energetic, you know, artist, of course. I think of his verse in Queer off Saturation 2, for example, probably one of the highlights of his Brockhampton career to me. You know, he was always cool and good, but this really showed something else, and classic example of a artist from a group going solo and blossoming and showing more than they ever could as a member of that group. You love to see it. But yeah, let me know, what'd you think about Matt Champion's debut album, Mika's Laundry? Were you as wowed and impressed by it as me? And for more music reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Tyla's self-titled debut album. Tyla, 22-year-old South African singer, really blew up seemingly out of nowhere with her breakthrough single, Water, from summer 2023. TikTok certainly helped propel that song at the start, but that song became a certified, genuine hit worldwide, a top 10 hit in many countries, really just kind of shot out of a cannon. To me, I think what stands out most about Tyla's self-titled debut album is that Tyla is clearly the leader, the face of the breakthrough of Ampiano music at the world stage. We've seen Afrobeats and Afropop become increasingly more popular in mainstream worldwide. Of course, you know the artists who led that charge, Burna Boy, Remo, Wizkid. But Tyla clearly is the face of Ampiano music and bring, you know, a more poppy glean to it as well. It's happening, you know, and I think it's pretty interesting to see other African genres follow suit and become bigger and more accepted worldwide. Very much reminds me of what's happened with Latin music, where reggaeton set the tone, and then you saw stuff like dembow and corridos tumbados follow suit. But Tyla, following the breakthrough success of Water, has given us a really cohesive, solid record. I think her singing is very strong and stable throughout. She really feels right at home on these kind of songs, but also she can give you some pop. She can give you some R&B. Clearly, pretty talented artist already, and despite a meteoric rise, I think it'd be really foolish to doubt the future success of her as an artist, just because you kind of see it all right there, the singing talent, but also I think just some really enjoyable music on this, again, very cohesive record. A lot of awesome background vocals, which I always love from the production side of things, really strong choruses throughout. I just thought it was a really cohesive, consistent record. There's some big features on this. I think Tyla and Tems on the song Number One really stands out. Of course, that's a big co-sign as well, coming from Tems. Jump, you have Gunna and Skillbang, who I believe is a dancehall DJ, and Gunna kind of fitting in, doing a little bit of a different flair than you expect from him. On My Body, big Becky G feature, that's huge. Honestly, the weakest feature, of course, would be Travis Scott on the Water remix, which is just a superfluous and unnecessary remix to an already great song. I think track 2, Safer, really stood out to me. I enjoyed that one, Truth or Dare as well. ART, I also quite liked. I'd be hard-pressed to expect another hit on the scale of Water this soon, but I think Tyla did enough to back up the success of that hit, which came out of nowhere to many. So yeah, I mean, for someone who's at such a young age, she's clearly going to lead the way with this style of music, and it'll be very interesting to watch. But let me know, how'd you feel about Tyla's, you know, debut record? What were you expecting following Water? And for more music reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. The fifth Ghostbusters film, the second in the Ghostbusters, you know, reboot relaunch we're currently in following 2021's Ghostbusters Afterlife. Afterlife, of course, directed by Jason Reitman, son of the original Ghostbusters director Ivan Reitman. Jason Reitman is back co-writing the screenplay this time. Frozen Empire is directed by Gil Keenan instead, who also co-wrote the Afterlife screenplay with Jason. And Frozen Empire, of course, stars Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard and McKenna Grace, all returning from Afterlife. But, of course, we also have the old heads, the OGs of the Ghostbusters franchise showing up as well and having a lot more to do in this film than they did in Afterlife. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, all back. And Also, we have a lot of the other side characters from Afterlife, such as Logan Kim as Podcast, Lester O'Connor as Lucky, and new people as well, including Kumail Nanjiani and Patton Oswalt. There's a lot of characters in this movie. Ultimately, I think Ghostbusters Afterlife is just okay. I had a good time with it, but it's really hard not to see a lot of the faults with this movie. Really, this movie just bit off way too much. Like, it tried to bust too many ghosts. Too much busting happened in Frozen Empire. If we busted just a little less, I think this movie could have been better. The issue is there's too many characters. You have the entire cast of Afterlife, plus the entire living cast, basically, of the original Ghostbusters films, plus new characters. There's just too much going on. All the subplots in this movie, none of them work as well as they should because they're just not given enough time. So we don't really have enough buildup for the overarching villain of the film. We don't have enough buildup with any of the supporting stuff. It's just a bit frustrating because the humor is also a bit up and down. I think some of it's quite funny, some of it doesn't land at all. And there's like good bones to something quite fun and enjoyable in Frozen Empire, but unfortunately, there's just a bit too much going on for this to really come together in a satisfying way. It's not bad or offensive, but it's not great either. You know, just kind of thinking of like all these subplots, right, and how none of them are able to shine. Just trying to like run through them all in my head, how many there are. We had, you know, the Spengler household dynamics and, you know, Finn Wolfhard's Trevor and McKenna Grace's Phoebe, kind of, you know, having teen angst, and they're, you know, different ages, so it's different kinds of teen angst. You have that aspect and the family dynamic, and, you know, Paul Rudd as Gary, you know, he's not a Spengler, but he's cozying up to Carrie Coon, so is he part of the family? What is his role to the kids? You have that aspect, which I think is would be pretty nice if there was more time spent on it. We have Phoebe's friendship / pseudo-attraction, quote-unquote, to this ghost teenage girl, and where that goes. You know, I think that's something that should have been a lot more entertaining than it ended up being. Teenage girl makes friends with ghost teenage girl. It somehow is pretty dry. I wish that was better. We also have the whole introduction of Kumail Nanjiani's character as Nadim, who is actually this firebending, firemaster character tasked with protecting the world against this ultimate evil, this ice demon god. All of that is, you know, kind of yada yada for plot, but we don't spend enough time with it, and I don't know, it kind of advances quite quickly. Everything with the OG cast, for the most part, you know, Bill Murray has really two scenes in the movie, and his best line is spoiled in the trailer. Ernie Hudson is also really barely in the movie. Dan Aykroyd, I think, you know, has the most to do. I actually quite enjoyed Ray. It's probably my favorite aspect of the movie. I thought his stuff was pretty fun. You know, they link up with Patton Oswalt at one point, who is effectively this exposition character giving you so much data dumping on the big bad of this movie. You have Celeste O'Connor and Logan Kim back from the first movie, and they have effectively almost nothing at all to do, but they're still in the movie. You know, like, maybe you could have cut them out and focus the film a little bit more. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, the day-to-day stuff, like just watching the crew be in the firehouse, do ghost-busting stuff, bust them up, bust some ghosts, that would be fun to spend more time with, you know, but we're kind of ratcheting through plot, and we have all these other subplots that are a bit distracting because they're just not effective enough, you know? The stuff with, like, the ghost lab I thought was pretty interesting, seeing all the various ghosts being trapped and tested on and stuff. I thought the possessor ghost was probably one of the most consistent gags in the movie. I quite enjoyed that. I do enjoy podcast humor. Like, at least he delivers on that. I don't even know what they're called. You know, I'm not a hardcore Ghostbusters fan, but like the Michelin Man Doughboy ghosts, those motherfuckers are funny as hell. Watching them kill, you know, run each other through pencil sharpeners and lay each other on fire and cut each other open, and when they're mad, when they're scared, I think they're really funny. I wish there was more time with them, honestly. Finn Wolfhard does not have a lot going on in this movie. I don't even mind him in the film, but he has very little to do. And McKenna Grace, you know, like, she's playing a teenager who's also introverted. It's not the best hang, honestly. it's not against the performance, but it's just, it's not the most fun time. Again, the stuff with the ghost girl also is not very fun. So yeah, it's kind of just a mismatch of lots of different things. I think the Kumail humor's up and down. Unexpectedly, we got like sex jokes at one point from his character, from Finn and stuff. That was honestly really funny, kind of came out of nowhere. I wasn't even disappointed that there's not like this massive confrontation against the bad guy, because I didn't really care about the bad guy the entire time, the ice ghost. The fact that the confrontation happens inside the firehouse, I think it's actually a pretty clever way to keep this movie's budget in check. Only $100 million budget, so it doesn't have to be a massive success for this film to be a success and warrant a third film, as I'm sure Sony would love to happen. Ultimately, Ghostbusters, it's not like a high-end IP. It has its fans, its loyal fans for sure, but it's not to that degree. So I just don't know if there's a whole lot of like general passion for these films. But I mean, for what it is, Frozen Empire I think is perfectly enjoyable for this type of film. But to me, the flaws are just so glaring. But they're glaring because if they were amended, you feel like this could have been a lot better. But for what it is, I still enjoyed my time. I think Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon do a great job throughout this movie. They're, of course, both excellent actors, but they, I think, are able to communicate a lot and carry a lot of the emotion in the film. Honestly, for a film that doesn't spend a lot of time giving you an opportunity to have a lot of that emotion. So, yeah, Frozen Empire, it's fine. I wish it was better. But yeah, let me know. What did you think of it? Did you like it more or less than me? Let me know. And for more movie reviews, subscribe. And I'll see you next time. All right, that's going to do it for the pod this week. Next week, we have, I think, two high-profile things for sure, of course. Beyoncé, new album, Renaissance Part 2, The Country Pivot. A lot of questions, a lot of thoughts. Texas Hold'em is a big hit already. I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about the new Beyoncé album like we always do. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, new film in the Monsterverse. Very excited to talk about that in all its crazy glory, I'm sure. Baby Monster on the K-pop front are releasing their first EP, their first project following their debut single. So I'm very curious how that one's going to go. And then also Netflix's Three Body Problem series from Benioff and Weiss, which is out now. I will aim to talk about the whole season in full. So make sure you subscribe. YouTube.com/nostalgiapod, linktree.com/nostalgiapod. See links below. Get the best of 2024 Spotify playlists. Let me know it's good, and let's get into it.